5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
You make $5 million a year. I'm a jerk on the radio. I know better.
Those are facts. Print that. Tweet that.
I don't like people or teams or products that dodge the heavy lifting.
If you don't like what we say or anybody says, here's what I would suggest. Get a rating.
The idea that you preface your opinion by what your identity is to me insane.
You gotta be kidding me. You can't run this clown out of town fast enough.
This man is a disgrace. He's throwing everything away. Get him the hell out.
That is a take. It's a strong take. It's one of the best takes ever.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. Now, here's your host, Jason Barrett.
Greetings and welcome to the third episode of Season 5 of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. I am Jason Barrett. As always, we are presented by Core Image Studio, where sports stations turn to elevate their imaging. I'm joined on today's episode by a gentleman who I have a ton of respect for and have known for a long time, even though we've never worked on the same side. My guest is Chris Olivero, the market manager for Entercom New York. Chris, as many in the industry know, was one of the best programming executives in the business for CBS Radio. He was part of Entercom when the company took over CBS a few years ago, but he eventually stepped away, took a breather to explore a few other interests, but as is the case with many radio folks, eventually the business lured him back. He's now tasked with leading Entercom New York into the future, including WFAN, so I thought it would be insightful for listeners to learn what drew him back, where he sees the fan heading, where he stands with Craig Carton. Plus, I wanted his input on a few industry issues, so stick around and please don't skip ahead. There are two things I want to tackle before we dive into the interview. The first one is quick and easy. We're looking for a sales executive to help us elevate our advertising business. If you're involved in the industry and looking for something to sink your teeth into to supplement your income, or if you're on the sidelines as a result of the pandemic and looking to stay busy, get in touch. This is a commission sales position. You can find more details on the Barrett Sports Media website under the job section, or you could just email me, jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. That same email address works if you're interested in advertising your company to reach our audience. Secondly, and this one I'm going to need a little more of your time, so please bear with me. Our five-year anniversary is coming up on Tuesday after Labor Day. I think LinkedIn listed it as some date in August because I must have changed my job status in August of 2015, but we actually launched BSM in September of 2015. It's a date I'm very proud of because it represents the day I placed a bet on myself and tried something new. I started this company with nothing, and to see the brand grow as it has during that time has been truly gratifying. The past few months of traffic on the website were especially impressive, which honestly surprised me because I thought the interest might decline due to the pandemic and everyone having more time to digest other things. But the opposite took place. You guys have been reading our content more and more, and I've got my writing team to thank for it because they do a tremendous job. When it comes to me, I try to invest myself in the stations I consult and add things that they don't see or think about or necessarily have an answer to. I'm not just a radio ratings and content guy. I think that's one issue in our industry. A lot of people have a perception of what a consultant does, and it stops them from pursuing outside support. But there's never been a more important time to utilize help than now. I'm well-versed in social media strategy, podcasting, helping brands with talent discovery. I even take calls to help salespeople. I've gone on market visits and led programming meetings, as well as sales and digital meetings. When I work with the brand, my job is to add value regardless of what area it's in. This past year alone, I've helped a number of my clients earn ad buys through relationships. Now, that's not listed in the job description for a consultant. I would eliminate the word consultant if I could, but I can't seem to find a better title to sum up what I do, so I stick with it. If you've got any suggestions, by all means, fire away. While that touches on the consulting part of my job, I'm also heavily invested in the BSM website. I run the online brand no different than I would run a radio station, which means looking at new writers, covering the basics such as day-to-day news, creating cool events and features, which we've done with things such as the BSM Summit or our annual Top 20 or the Greatest Sports Center Anchor Tournament, or if you were reading last week, the deep dive into Fox Sports Radio's 20-year history. When I took the plunge 5 years ago, there were nearly 800 stations in the sports format, and people only really knew about each other due to being in the same company, social media, or reading an occasional piece about them on a trade site. They really didn't know how or why people did certain things in the business because that type of content wasn't available. I decided I wanted to be a publisher, editor, reporter, and storyteller, and now we're blessed to have 13 people contributing and educating you further on the sports media industry. And the reason I mentioned the backstory to all of this is because it ties to our next item. BSM is going to remain strong and continue super serving those who retain us. That's my number one priority. Always has been, always will be. If anything, I'm hopeful of working with even more sports stations in the future, so market managers, programmers, corporate executives, don't be shy. However, I also want to continue challenging myself and pursuing opportunities to grow. One that I've thought about for the past 2 years but wasn't ready to take the plunge into was the news talk space. That, though, is going to change. In a few weeks, we will introduce Barrett News Media, a separate division of our company. I've been working the past few months on building a website focused on the news radio, television, and print business, assembling a team of writers to produce content, and putting my ear on news talk programming to strengthen my knowledge of the format. There are a lot of similarities between sports and news talk, and I wasn't ready to travel down this path when I was 41 and 42, but now at the age of 46, I'm in a different place, and it's a lane I'm excited about exploring. I purposely am building this as a separate entity, as I don't want to mix sports and news in the same location. I think there are a lot of untold stories in the news media space, and I'm looking forward to building and expanding relationships with talent producers, sellers, programmers, and executives who are a regular part of the news talk format. After Labor Day, I'll announce who will be part of the new online brand, including a former programmer who will be helping me with consulting stations in the news talk space. If you're interested in writing, email me at jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. Feel free to touch base, too, if your station has needs for outside support or if you're looking to advertise on our new news brand. We're looking forward to spreading our wings and hope you'll check it out once we're ready to roll. But now it's time to shift gears and turn our attention to someone who's had no shortage of experiences with formats, whether they be news, sports, music, you name it. Chris Olivero is the market manager for Entercom New York and the longtime corporate executive responsible for growing CBS Radio, which was purchased a few years ago by his current employer, Entercom. Chris is one of the classiest people in the business, incredibly smart, and a big reason why confidence is high at 345 Hudson Street in New York, and I'm pleased to bring you our conversation. 3, 2. I last saw you in February at the summit. You gave this great speech in honor of Mark Chernoff and Mitch Rosen. You talked about how much you love the business, made it clear that you weren't looking ahead to being back in the business. Then the pandemic hits, Wheezy retires, Susan gets promoted, the economy tanks, and in the middle of this chaos comes word that you're coming back, market manager of Entercom New York. And before I even get into why you chose to get involved, I'm curious, was the deal done before, during, or after the summit?
Absolutely after. And I could remember it was the last, it was mid-March. When was the summit? The date of the summit was?
It was like the 25th or 26th of February.
It was pretty warm for February in New York.
Right.
So literally, it was not even on my radar at that time. I was thinking and pursuing some other things. But it was no more than maybe 2 weeks later right before the city shut down for COVID and you were still allowed to have indoor dining.
Yeah.
Susan Larkin, who you mentioned, invited me to a lunch and she shared with me some of the things that was going on with her career and moving to Philly to be the COO. And she kind of sprung the New York market manager job on me, caught me off guard, caught me at a weak moment, and I was intrigued. And that's really when it started.
So then what ultimately got you mentioned you were intrigued? What ultimately pushed you over the line? I mean, you had been away for a little bit. You had started to move yourself mentally to other things. What convinced you to come back?
Maybe it's cheesy to say, but I think you always do return to your first love. In life and in business. And my first love is local radio, specifically New York radio. This is where I've spent my entire career. And when I say New York radio, I specifically mean the Entercom New York cluster that I'm now the market manager of, you know, 92.3, which is now Alt 92.3. I walked in the door as an intern for 92.3 K-Rock, you know, in the mid 90s. So it's always been my first love. And I think that was some of the pull of it. I also think, and I've said this for years, I think the market manager for this cluster is the best broadcasting job in all of New York City, better than anything on the television side when you consider the assets, you know, when you think of WINS or 880 or FAN or CBS FM. So the job itself has always been appealing to me. And even though I spent my career as a quote unquote programming guy, I think people who worked with me at CBS knew that I was always passionate about more than just the content side of the business. I was intrigued by the economics, the financials, the infrastructure, the business of radio. So when you look at the market manager, you touch all aspects of the business, not just programming. You've got revenue, you've got engineering. And I think I spoke to you about this. The last thing that probably pushed me over the top was maybe I'm a little psychotic, but I was absolutely on the search for a challenge. And local radio before the pandemic was challenging. Local radio during a pandemic, really challenging. So I was like, practice what I preach. I was looking for a challenge. Well, here's one. What's stopping you from taking it? So all those things, I think, kind of pushed me into saying, go for it. And Susan was very compelling and convincing. She's tough to say no and no to. So here I am 4 months later.
You know, it's interesting, and I think you'll probably agree with this. When you get outside of the business for a little bit, I think it energizes you because you're away from the day-to-day rigors of running a radio group. On top of it, I think you get better because you pay attention to a lot more things that maybe you didn't have time for. When you did get away from the industry, what did you learn and miss about the business while being on the outside?
The clearest thing that was driven home to me was, and I think all of us, when you're on what I would call that hamster wheel, where you're living it every day, you don't have the time or the headspace to consume audio or radio as a regular listener would. You're always listening to it because your paycheck is tied to it. And that's human nature. So having that little break where, hey, I get to choose what I want to listen to now because it's actually good, as opposed to it's my job, I get paid to listen, I think it's freeing on a multitude of fronts. So I think going back for the first time in my adult life to being a listener and not someone in the industry, my ears were completely different. And also my finger was completely different, meaning I was punching around the dial now.
Yep.
I was consuming a lot of non-Entercom, non-CBS radio audio. And that only makes you better, to your point.
You know, when the news came out, I started talking to a bunch of people. And the feeling I got from everybody was unanimous. They were all thrilled that you were back. The one question that came up a couple of times was, is that going to be enough for Chris long term? How do you answer that? I mean, you said before about how much these brands meant to you and New York radio in general. Is that enough, given that, you know, at one point you were a corporate executive overseeing an entire company's programming division?
It is actually more than enough. There is not enough hours in the day. When you think about, again, how big this operation is, you know, CBS FM, Alt, New York Country, NEW, two big news stations, FAN, a 24/7 you know, sports network, two floors in lower Manhattan of not in post pandemic, a lot of people running around, a lot of, you know, operational stuff. So it is more than enough. And for me, I never looked at my jobs as, well, you know, how many stations do I have under my, you know, quote unquote control, or mm-hmm. how big is the list of direct reports? I always viewed it as, am I having fun? Do I enjoy what I do? And can I make an impact? And like I said, this New York market manager job is probably just a different version of all the stuff that I loved about my corporate job.
Right.
I'm just more on the front line now. I'm just directly on the front line now, and I'm experiencing it like I did when I first started. Because, you know, when you're in local radio and then you go to corporate, one of the things I always disliked about corporate was you're removed from the center of gravity.
Right.
You're removed from the actual studio operations. So to now to be back in that trench, I couldn't put a price tag on that.
You know, you are a market manager who does have a programming background, so I do want to ask you about some programming items. I mean, you look at,
sure.
I know how much WFAN has meant to you in your career. It's obviously mm-hmm. the flagship
yeah.
of the entire sports format. You could argue one of the most important brands in radio, bar none. Some would say shine might have come off in the recent years, and it's probably because of Mike and Craig's situation. What's your level of confidence in the present state of WFAN, and where do you think it needs to go to make sure you have the next decade or two of success the way you guys have already?
So before I answer the FAN question, you mentioned I'm a programmer who's become a market manager. That's not lost on me. That's a lot of pressure, because it is rare for programmers to become market managers. We
right.
all know that. I'm thankful to David Field. I'm thankful to Susan Larkin, but I joke to our fellow programmers, I hope I don't screw it up for everybody on the programming side, because, you know, if I'm not successful as a market manager, it's going to set program directors back a generation when it comes to, will they be able to become a market manager? So I hope I don't drop the ball for all of us. Now onto the FAN question. Yeah, I mean, I think your framing of it is fair. I think when you have a brand that is 33 years old, there will be cycles of ups and downs. FAN has clearly had more up cycles than down. So I don't think anyone's going to be like blown away by that analysis. What I do know certainly, though, is that the vision for the station hasn't changed, and it's been consistent, and that's to be the most influential sports media platform in New York City. Full stop. And that's our goal today. That was our goal 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Now, have some of the names changed? Absolutely. Have even the platforms of distributions changed? Absolutely. From AM to FM to digital. But that goal has always been the same. How do we, you know, dictate the sports conversation in the city? And that's the premise, you know, I always look at. Do general managers of sports teams or owners of sports teams in New York, are they still concerned every day with what comes out of the speaker at FAN? And the answer is they are still concerned in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at all our competitors in the market, be it newspapers, local TV, regional sports network, digital exclusive players, we're still the loudest, literally the loudest sports voice in the room. But have we had changes? Have we had some things literally out of our control? Sure, the last couple of years. But the station is healthy, and the station always evolves. I remember specifically, you go back to 2007, when Imus left the station. Everybody thought, well, you know what? FAN is never going to be the same. How are they going to replace that revenue, the uniqueness, etc.? And then Boomer and Carton came along.
Right.
And then when Craig left a couple of years ago, everybody was like, oh, that's the end of WFAN. And then Boomer and Geo came along and continued that march
yep.
Of excellence. So again, it has happened before. I think the fact that Mike retiring, the Craig situation happening literally simultaneously within months of each other was an issue for the station, especially when you think about the hallmark of FAN for those three decades has always been consistency.
Yeah.
Like the lineup for most of the first 30 years has been pretty consistent. And then in the course of a couple of months, big change in mornings, big change in afternoons. I actually think it's a sign of how strong the brand is that FAN was able to withstand that amount of change. I think a brand of lesser stature would have been taken out at the knees if they had to take on that magnitude of change within months of each other. So overall, I think the brand is really healthy. It's always a question, though, of where is that next generation of talent? Where are we going to find them, bring them in to merge with the current lineup and keep the train going?
You know, a big part of that, too, you mentioned vision and, you know, constantly evolving. You guys have been blessed because you've had one of the best in the business in Mark Chernoff there. But I looked at Mark at the summit, and he's not 25, so he's not going to be there probably in 20 years, unfortunately. If he is, you know, he's probably going to be sitting next to you in the office. He's going to have someone else programming. that being said, in the past, you guys had Eric Spitz as the heir apparent. He's now obviously at Sirius. How do you make sure that you're built not only for the present with Mark, but also for where things go once Mark decides one day that, hey, listen, it's been fun. I want to enjoy life now.
By the way, and you mentioned it earlier about the summit this year, and I thank you for giving me that opportunity to publicly express, you know, my deep personal and professional affection for Mark. And that was one of the highlights of my career, to be able to do that publicly, because I know Mark was uncomfortable with it. So to sort of be able to do that publicly and to express how important Mark is, not only to me, but to FAN and the entire industry, you know, was special. Because again, I can't think, and I consider myself a radio geek, radio history geek, I can't think of a PD that's been at one station in market one for 30 consecutive years. I think Mark got here in 92, 93. It's crazy to think the level of success that he's had. But you're right. You know, at some point, the responsibility on all of us in leadership positions is to make sure transitions are smooth. We're planning for the future, not knowing when the future might come. The
right.
future might come tomorrow or might come 5 years from now or 10 years from now. But we've always, that's our job, to be prepared. So Mark is still going strong every single day. I'm having Zoom or GoToMeetings with him. He's like the Energizer Bunny. But I will share with you, Mark and I have these conversations all the time about, hey, Mark, you got to keep me updated. Like, where's your head on this stuff? And the good thing about our relationship is when the time comes that Mark says, you know what, I want to do something different, or I want to segue, I want to slow down, that's going to be a friend-to-friend conversation. And it's going to be led with this one thought from him. What's in the best interest of FAN? What can I do to help FAN? Because I know that's where Mark's head is, and that's where my head is. So when that conversation takes place, the good thing will be Entercom owns and operates the most successful, biggest sports radio stations around America. So if you were to say, is there a bench of sports radio audio programming experts? There is a bench, and the bench resides in Entercom. So the in-house talent is phenomenal, and the resumes of success is phenomenal. So that's a clear place that we would look. But I would also say that as the business continues to evolve and the industry continues to evolve, the next program director at FAN could be someone from outside radio.
Right.
Might be someone in a different genre of sports media. As the world is changing so quickly, I do know if we ever, ever, ever got to the day where Mark tells me he's looking to do something else, and we actually post publicly, job opening, program director, brand manager, WFN New York, I believe the phone will ring in and outside of radio. And I actually said this to David Field the other day. I think the market manager job for New York is the best job in broadcast. Selfishly, I believe that, and that's one of the reasons I took it. I would argue, though, that the program director of WFAN is probably the best job in sports media.
No doubt. You'll have no shortage of interest. And you're right. As the business evolves, that position itself will evolve. You know, speaking of evolving,
yeah.
You're trying to move the brand forward. You're trying to, you talked before about looking for that new, fresh talent. But, and I'm sure you knew I was going to bring this up at some point because you pay attention to the New York papers. Every time Craig Carton's in the news, they're going to obviously connect him to you because of your history together. Mm-hmm. I've already said on the record, if I was in charge of a station, I'd hire him tomorrow. I don't care about the PR. I don't care about the past. That guy has made a lot of people listen, and he's made a lot of people money. And so that's where I stand on it. From your vantage point of what you can say, if Craig is available to work, is that a conversation you want to have?
Yeah. I mean, I think I have been fairly consistent on this, publicly and even privately in the conversations I've had with staff. When the time comes and Craig is in a position where he can actually begin the next chapter of his career, of course we will talk. Here's a headline for you. I have spoken to him. Mm-hmm. We do have a relationship. I have spoken to him. Have I spoken to him about a job? No, I have not. We have talked about where he is with his family, where he is, you know, at this point in his life. At some point when he's ready, we'll have a business conversation. I guarantee you other companies, other well-known radio companies, other sports media companies are going to have the same conversation because, to your point, that's our job.
Yep.
That's my responsibility. When there's talent out there, I've got to investigate it. I've got to see if it makes sense. But does talking guarantee a job? No. And that's sometimes my frustration with the New York tabloids, which I love, though, because I used to be a paper boy. But they equate talking to a guarantee of a job.
Right.
So, no, I can tell you now, there has been no job offer made to Craig. We will talk at the appropriate time. When that is, I don't know. There are things in Craig's life right now, shockingly, that are more important than radio. I think people would understand that.
Yeah.
His resume, his success, his history with the station and the company warrants that conversation. But unfortunately, there's going to be no breaking news here on the podcast.
I didn't think there would be, but I think to your point, anytime, you know, someone who's got talent like that becomes available, who's got relationship history, did a great job for the station, of course they're going to go with it and try to generate a lot more interest in it. Look, 2 years ago, he was linked to Barstool. He was working for Fantasy Sports Network. He had appeared on Michael Kay's show. And on top of it, he had always been connected to Philadelphia. So it's not like Craig won't have options. He's a phenomenally talented guy. And I think most people are rooting for him to have a second chance where he pays it off. So obviously with your history with them, why wouldn't you have a conversation?
To me, Jason, the best thing about the whole thing is, and the fact that the newspapers, not the trades, because the trades get paid to cover radio, the fact that general market newspapers like The Post or Newsday or The Daily News are fascinated by it and actually care passionately about the nuances of the WFAN lineup, who's going to be mornings, who's going to be middays, who's going to be afternoons, and they cover it literally like it's breaking news. To me, that's a great thing. That shows we're relevant in the year 2020. That shows that people care, and that's a reflection of the brand, because there are very few radio stations, not just in New York, but around the country, that the general media marketplace cares about the day in and day out machinations of the lineup.
I've already had you put your programming hat on. I want you to switch it to your market manager hat, because I want an executive opinion on a few things. You probably saw this week, Joe Rogan said he thinks Twitter will be the next blockbuster video because it highlights too much hate and negativity, and it's ruined a lot of careers. And in the radio space, last week the Hornets announcer accidentally tweeted the N-word while trying to type nuggets, he's suspended. Darren McKee in Denver, same mistake, he's not on the air. Grant Napier in Sacramento lost his job in June. Yet, and I'm sure you remember this, Mike Francesa used to speak at conferences about not seeing a need for being on social, and everybody would label him out of touch for it. From where you sit, how important do you feel social media is for a talent and brand in 2020?
It's very important, number one. The other thing I would add to that point about Blockbuster, just because a handful of people misuse or abuse the platform doesn't mean the platform doesn't have value.
Right.
So again, if you think about the quantity of people on the platform, to cherry pick a handful of unfortunate bad situations doesn't mean the whole platform should be thrown out. So yes, social media, fill in the blank of the name of your favorite platform, I think is a critical part moving forward because it's what the audience expects. And I think where a lot of legacy media companies or broadcast companies get in trouble is where we still believe that we can dictate terms to the audience. That ship has sailed.
Yep.
Literally, I'm looking outside my window at my office at 345 Hudson. I could see the Hudson River. There's a boat going by. That ship has sailed. We can no longer dictate to listeners or audience the terms of engagement. So that's where they are. That's where they live. That's where they expect us to be. So we need to be there, but we need to be there responsibly, and we need to be there on brand message and on point. And if a talent of the future, today and moving forward, can't juggle on air and digital or social at the same time, they're not going to be employable. And I have always said for many years now to talent, you need to treat social with the same level of respect and reverence as you do your microphone. You've probably said it 1,000 times. If you wouldn't say it on air, don't say it on social. And just like you have a dump button or edit over the air, you have that ability before you hit send or enter
right,
on whatever post you're talking about. So if you take that same approach, you'll be fine. And the other thing, too, is you only have most people have a 4-hour broadcast day. That leaves 20 hours in the day. Your audience doesn't expect you to be silent for those 20 hours. They want to hear from you. So just because some people misuse it or abuse it or screw it up doesn't mean it's not valid.
I think it goes back to being responsible, right? Speaking about being responsible, managing budgets is a key part of management. So too is being profitable for your company. You follow the trades, so I'm sure you saw that Saga and Townsquare recently announced they were dropping Nielsen. Now that's a big expense off the books, but it does come with risk. I've heard agency execs and salespeople tell me ratings aren't vital to making deals, but GMs and PDs like the numbers for evaluating programming. But one meter, as we both know, can make or break a quarter, and the results can conflict with what you see digitally. The past few months have also shown us that you could be strategic, talented, and work your tail off and still have no answer for unemployment, a lack of sports, and inactivity on the roadways. So for the sizable investment, Chris, that radio groups make for measurement, is the return big enough? Do you see more groups following Saga and Townsquare's lead?
Whenever you talk to creative people, be it TV or radio, there's always going to be tension when it comes to ratings. That's just the nature of the beast, you know. So I do have a little sympathy for Nielsen because, you know, sometimes they could never win. Now, clearly, I have issues on certain things. But I don't think this conversation is actually going to be driven by the ownership groups or us per se. I think it's going to be driven by the client side. And it's going to be driven by the marketers and the advertisers, you know, and the agencies. Because at the end of the day, Nielsen really is a currency. It's what we trade on and it's what we sell and we monetize. So I don't think we're going to be able to do it on our own. But if there's enough passion from our partners on the marketing and commercial side for an adjustment on the currency, for a tweak, or an all outright new thing, that's where I think it'll get traction. Nielsen overall, though, for my years, even when I've disagreed, has been a good partner. When we've raised concerns, they've addressed it. It is not easy in the year 2020 to do what they do as quickly as things change. But no different than when we saw changes from diary to PPM, there will be another round of significant change. What form that takes, I don't know. But we've seen it before. We'll see it again.
You know, one other area of change, obviously digital audio has become a bigger deal. I know you and I have chatted about that before, and you're bullish on it. So is obviously Entercom. They're, you know, invested in radio.com, Cadence 13, Pineapple Street Media, not to mention the other partnerships with other radio groups who are putting their programming on radio.com. in April, I don't know if you saw it, Spotify CEO Daniel Ek said on an earnings call that he considers radio a huge competitor to his company, and he thinks the big audio trend of the next 20 years will be a shift from linear to on-demand. He felt the live world would one day be extinct. Where do you see the future of live content?
So I have always felt that audio trends trail video trends by a few years. So I always try to look, okay, what happened in the television universe in the last 10 years? And really try to study that in terms of the shift from linear to on-demand. And there's clearly a lot of data there and a lot of case study. If you agree with the premise that kind of audio will go through a similar experience, it'll just be maybe on a little bit of a lag time. Because again, people who listen to audio also watch video.
Yep.
People who listen to radio also consume television. So they're the same person. So I've always felt it's probably logical that some of the changes we've seen over the years on video consumption will probably begin year over year to continue to encroach as we've seen on the audio side. Now, I violently disagree with the word extinction because I do not believe that live linear broadcast radio will become extinct. But will it continue to shift in terms of how much of the consumption is linear, how much of it is on demand, how much of it is streaming versus AM versus FM? Yeah, will that meter constantly adjust and shift? Yeah, I think we saw a lot of that during the pandemic as people changed habits and stopped commuting in their car and stayed in their home. I'm always going to operate under the premise, as long as consumption is increasing, I can make it work depending on the platform. The bigger problem would be is if consumption was going down. If you were to tell me people are losing their interest in audio, they're losing their interest in sports conversation, that would concern me. But that's clearly not the case, and there's no metrics that will say that's the case. It's just we have to be prepared and be nimble enough to keep shifting. So you're a radio guy like me. You go back 10 years ago, program directors were in a cold panic about, I can't have somebody stream my station because if they don't listen on the FM, I will not get a rating point and I won't get a bonus. And,
right.
And then they go down the rabbit hole. I'm going to lose my job. We're well past that now where everybody understands it just matters if they consume. And once we consume, then you work with partners like Nielsen and others to get a fair reflection of that in the metrics. Then you sell that to a client in the form that they want. So I'm actually bullish on that because I do think it will follow similar trends of video. And that's not a bad thing. Like, change is not a bad thing.
If they're consuming your content, doesn't matter where they're doing it. You're going to be able to sell it as long as there's an audience. One executive final opinion from you that I want is on the topic of sports betting. You just launched the 30-minute show with JJ. You've got groups like FanDuel, DraftKings, and Barstool on the station, whether it be in commercial breaks or content. So obviously this is a hot space. Everyone has seen this coming for a while. If you looked into your crystal ball, where do you see the betting boom influencing the way sports talk radio is presented over the next 5 to 10 years?
Just like all of sports radio is local to a degree, today, betting is still a localized experience, you know, depending on what state you live in, if it's legalized. So the assumption is it will eventually be legal everywhere. All 50 states will finally get there. They will see the revenue upside, the tax basis revenue, et cetera. So I think once it becomes universal or national, and you could argue it's already there based on, you know, the markets that have approved it, it will become more and more accepted. And I think we're at the point, even though it's not legal in New York per se, in New Jersey, et cetera, it is fully accepted as a normal part of the sports conversation. You know, it's no longer taboo.
Yep.
It's also given us, and this is exciting to me, a new way to talk about games. Because we could all agree, sometimes it gets a little bit of a rut the way we would break down games and talk about games. But now you open up this whole new opportunity with lines and betting and future and head-to-head. it opens up a whole new conversation.
Yep.
And to me, that's exciting. So again, like I said to you before about dictating the terms to the audience, and that's where companies can get in trouble. We can't dictate the acceptance of gambling. Good or bad, it's here. It's mainstream. It's accepted. So we have to, again, go to where the audience is. And the audience is clearly in the gambling space. And shame on us if we don't recognize that.
You've been very gracious with your time. I do appreciate it. I've got one last thing from you.
Jason, I can go all night talking to you, man. Come on.
I don't want to do that to you, because if we do that, then they're going to think the market manager is not hard at work in New York, and that's not good, right? They're going to be going, how does Chris have an hour and a half for Barrett on a podcast? Isn't he supposed to be running this cluster? Last thing I've got for you, what still motivates you and excites you about the job?
Wow, good question. I do think a big part of it is personnel development. Anyone who's talked to me over the years, and I think we've spoken about this, I really benefited from some great mentors and being able to be given chances and opportunities to grow my career. So there is a part of me that still gets very excited when I see new people join the company, young people out of college who have a spark and a passion. And if somehow I can give them some time, give them some tidbits of advice and kind of help push them along and develop that next generation. It could be an on-air person. It could be, you know, a salesperson. So that is exciting for me. And then also too, I think on the product side, until you get to 100 share, you've always got upside. You know, so even if you're number one with a 10 share at a station, let's say, you still got 90 more share points to go for. It's kind of just going for perfection, I guess, knowing that you'll never get there, but it's the pursuit of it.
And if you do get there, you'll be worried that it's going to go away the following month.
Well, and then again, I blame Nielsen for that at that point. It's their fault.
I think, you know, having your leadership, your character in that building, especially as they look to the future, was a home run hire by Susan, by David, by everybody. I know it's a special place to you, so I'm obviously glad that you found something that you know, lit the fire and got you excited to get back in. But having Chris Oliveiro in the radio business is makes the business better. So I'm thrilled you're there. Appreciate you taking some time, and continued success with the brands.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate it, buddy. See ya.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, BarrettSportsMedia.com.